You're listening to the Podcast Detroit Network. Visit www.podcastdetroit.com for more information. The views and opinions expressed on this show do not necessarily represent those of the network, its advertisers, owners, or sponsors.
All right. Looks like we're live here for episode 11 of the Beer Tour Guy Show at the beautiful Podcast Detroit Studios in Royal Oak, Michigan. I'm your host, Steve Johnson, and I'm super excited. One of my favorite breweries, one of my favorite brewery reps is here with me today. Please introduce yourself.
Well, hello.
You just said you were going to talk that way. Like, you're not trying to pick me up.
No, I'm not. My wife wouldn't appreciate that. Kyle Vandeventer, sales director for Griffin Claw Brewing Company.
There we go. I shouldn't just say rep, sales director, because it sounds way cooler, doesn't it?
Right. I made all my reps change their titles to market managers.
Market managers. Yeah. That's kind of the hip terminology.
Right.
I remember when I got out of college and I was a sales representative, and that's what you called them. Right. And what a sales representative means, I worked for Kimberly-Clark when I got out of college, which is the consumer products company, and you call on grocery stores, right? So as a sales rep, I dressed up all nice every day, but I really went to grocery stores and would, you know, rip off tags and try to get items slotted in and reset stores and deal with damaged product. And it wasn't really that salesy. It was more like, you know, maintenance, right? I'm sure there's days where you feel like that's all you're doing. But we use the term sales rep. I wonder what they call them now. So maybe market manager, market.
I worked in distribution for almost 10 years. Yeah. And so my title changed three times between three different distributors, but I was doing the same job. So I went from sales representative to account manager to market manager. So you can dress it up as whatever you want to dress it up like, but it's the same job.
So you're managing all the people though. On sales, basically. That's what a sales director would be.
Yeah, yeah. I have my team of three that's pretty brand new since October. And then just kind of dealing with the ins and outs that is in the brewery business.
So let's back up a bit. Let's start with when did you come into the brewery business and kind of what's your background kind of pre-Griffin Claw life?
Yeah, so I'm 31. I started doing this when I was 20.
Wow, I would have thought you were like, you know, 28.
it's that chubby Dutch
oh my God.
Face that I
well,
have.
I'm going to take a picture now that you say that.
There you go.
All right, that's perfect. And then I'll talk while I'm pulling myself away from the microphone so no one can hear me.
Perfect. So I graduated from CMU at the worst economical period in the history of the United States with a degree in finance. So no one wanted to listen to some 20, 21-year-old talk about how to make them money. So I went back to what was my summer job at the time and working on a golf course. And an owner of a distributor came up to me locally up north and said, come work for me. And here I am. I really haven't left the business since then. And I've kind of floated around between three different distributors over 9 years. Over 2 years ago, almost 2.5 years ago, Griffin Claw came up and said, hey.
Oh, it's been that long.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. My 2 year was not too long ago.
Wow, in this day and age, that's pretty awesome.
Yeah, it's been a wild ride. It's been kind of cool. It's been fun. It's been interesting, to say the least, to see the industry over a decade evolve very rapidly. Where, you know, selling craft beer in mid-Michigan 10 years ago, people scoffed and laughed at me. And then I came down here 6 or 7 years ago, and it was still kind of a struggle. It wasn't exactly the easiest thing in the world. To now where it's in such high demand that there's 350, 360 breweries in the state. So
yeah. And that's – the whole U.S. is like that now.
Incredible.
I was we're in April now. last month, I was up in Vermont at a beer marketing tourism conference and had, you know, just industry people from all over. Not that different from going to like the Guild, Michigan Brewers Guild Winter Conference, but a little more specific to just the beer marketing side of it. And wow, yeah, you hear that same story though. And I was in a room with 40 different beer tour operators. So running Motor City Brew Tours. I started that in 2009 when there was like three of those. Now there's like, you know, more than 40, but there were 40 in that room that day. Almost all of them said they were like, you know, 3, 4, 5 years old when I said I started in 2009, it looked like I was an AARP member or something, you know? How funny is that, right? Isn't it? Like, I was a veteran by saying that I've made it, you know, 9 years in June this year, right? But it just shows how much explosion we've had in the past so many years, how it's really changed your job, I would think, and changed opportunities.
It's weird. It's awesome. Don't get me wrong. It's very awesome for the industry that I kind of live and die for to take off and be so successful. But it's also it's kind of like a, I don't want to say it a convoluted market. It's just it's an interesting market. I mean, Green Flash just announced this week the foreclosure, and now they're gone.
So I just shared that on my Facebook page for Two Beers In and Michigan Beer Tours, my second Facebook page, I guess. Yeah, wow. So like they kind of did that in stages. Like they said, all right, we're going to sell our Virginia Beach. We're going to lay off a bunch of people. We're going to pull back from all these markets. And then bam, they just say we're foreclosed on. Like amazing.
Yeah.
Isn't it?
I mean, it shows.
When did they come into our market? Sorry, like 2 years ago?
No, it's been more than that. Because I remember I still worked at one of my distributors. So I base my timeline about where okay. I worked. And it's been at least three or four, from my understanding, probably more so towards three. But it just goes to show that you can have this great business model and you can have this great beer, but if you expand too quickly,
yeah,
if you don't thoroughly think things out, if you don't do it methodically and slow, the days of 70% growth every year,
that's
no
gone.
Matter what, that is completely gone. Beer consumption as a whole has not gone up.
Right.
It's stayed pretty steady. So all that really means is those pieces of the pie have gotten smaller. So that big piece of pie that was available 10 years ago is divvied up into 20 to 30 spots. So you need to be very smart about how you do things now. You can't just expect to sell your California beer in Vermont or Virginia and make it be successful. It needs to have a story. It needs to have good beer. It needs to have a presence. So it's kind of made
– and support in the markets that it's in, right?
Yeah. It's made us evolve. It's this whole industry, you have to evolve. You can't have the same mindset you did 10 years ago. If you do, you're out of luck. So it's kind of made all of us rethink about how we do things for the better. Because in all reality, the more that we evolve, the more change, the betterment for our culture.
So let's do a little background on Griffin Claw and kind of their starts. And let's start with the man, Dan Rogers,
Mr. Rogers.
Yeah, Mr. Rogers. So he started in 92 in Las Vegas, started mm-hmm. the first brewery there.
Yeah, big dog.
Big dog. I'm going to be in Vegas in November. So I don't know if I've ever actually been to Big Dog now that you say that. Yeah.
They just won a medal at GABF. We were sitting by them.
Oh, that's pretty cool.
Yeah, they won a medal, so we went out and celebrated with them afterwards.
Oh, that's cool. Yeah. So you were at GABF having some fun.
Yeah.
That's like a whole separate conversation.
Dear Lord.
So Dan eventually comes here 1999, eventually finds himself at Michigan Brewing Company.
Yep.
Brews there for a few years. And then he comes over to Big Rock Chop House in 2004. Am I correct on all that? Okay. So a lot of people, I think, probably don't know that part of it, the story. They probably didn't know he worked at Michigan Brewing. They probably didn't know what a Big Rock Chop House was or that Big Rock Chop House brewed beer. I think a lot of people didn't know that. I did because in my first couple of tours, I eventually slotted in Big Rock Chop House and took people in there. And people thought I was going to buy them a steak when I brought them in there, but I wasn't. And he was probably not as – he was known in the cooler side of the craft beer community at that point because he was winning awards at GABF and elsewhere. But he wasn't – he didn't have a packaged product. There wasn't anything out in stores. It was just if you went to Big Rock Chop House and had a good meal, you noticed that they were making beer basically, right? Right. So then the LePage family decides to and the Nicholas family, the two owners of Griffin Claw decided to break that off into Griffin Claw Brewing Company. That jumpstarted us all the way to what, 2013?
Roughly, yeah. We will turn five this summer.
Amazing.
Yeah.
When you think about it.
Right.
Yeah. Like you guys were new kids on the block, but you weren't really when you think about it. A lot mm-hmm. of people don't catch that. Like I'd always have to tell that part of the story when I'd tell people like, hey, I'm a big fan of Griffin Claw. Yeah, where'd they come from? How all of a sudden did they have all this? And I'm like, well, there's a huge background there, isn't there? There's a big family history of opening restaurants, bars, and whatnot, correct?
Right. It's My corny tagline is that we are a 4-year-old brewery with a 12-year-old history. We've been making majority of the recipes that we still do are Dan's from not only 2004, but even from his Michigan Brewing Company days.
Okay.
Screaming Pumpkin outdates Dan's right. Griffin Claw.
Because he created that at Michigan Brewing.
Correct. Yeah. And we just, when they went out of business, we took all of his old recipes and namesakes that he had created over there with Bobby Mason and brought it to us. So it's, we popped up on the scene. It'll be 5 years in July and kind of confused a lot of people with the immediate, I don't want to say success, but yeah, immediate success out the gate. And little did a lot of people know is that we had a background. We knew what right. we were doing. Norm's Raggedy Ass won Best IPA at World Beer Cup in 2010. We didn't open until 13.
Right.
So that predates us. We have 15 to 18 medals between World Beer Cup and GIBF that predates our Griffin Claw namesake. We had to change the name if we moved down the street. There's another brewery on the east side or the east coast of the United States that has Big Rock.
There is.
So
yeah.
we had to effectively and change our name. And actually, in a lot of our first initial stuff from MLCC and even on our like expense accounts, it actually says Eaton Street Brewery Company.
Oh, it says Eaton Street.
We didn't have a name. So that's what we are officially known as through MLCC for right now, just because that's what we had to register as.
Okay.
It was a really quick ride. We didn't expect the amount of success that we got out of the gate. The brewery, the 15,000 square foot facility in Birmingham was made to brew 3,000 barrels. We did 9,000 in 6 months.
Amazing.
And then we did 13.
What a crazy difference of shuffling stuff around to figure that out.
Dear Lord.
Every time I go there, I feel like it's totally different than when I went there last time.
You and me both, and I worked there.
Yeah.
I've been there for roughly two and a half years, and the amount of evolution that we've done internally inside Birmingham has been crazy. That doesn't even include our new facility in Rochester Hills. So, yeah, it's – We needed to evolve quick. We had a demand that we didn't think that we were going to have, and we didn't have that supply yet. So we had to knock down parts of our brewery. We had to put new fermenters in. We were brewing all this out of a 17-barrel system. So 9,000 barrels in 6 months off of a 17-barrel system.
That's constant brewing.
Pretty ridiculous.
Yeah.
Those guys that created that foundation, I give them all the power in the world because they were working their butts off 24/7 to get this done. And we really didn't change our staff numbers until a couple of years ago when we realized, we need more infrastructure. So it's been a wild ride. And to be not even 5 years old and be the top 10 in the state of Michigan is pretty awesome, pretty crazy, pretty scary.
What did you do last year in barrels?
So last year we took a step back because we intentionally. We had to put the new 50-barrel system in. So that took a while. That took about 2-3 months of production away from us. So we knew that was coming. We intentionally pared back a lot of our styles, really went with a core 5 and a couple seasonals, and that's it. Didn't really do anything new, crazy, exciting, awesome. And we actually had some production hiccups because of the system. Going from a 17-barrel system to a 50 isn't exactly
a big
something.
Jump.
Yeah. Yeah. So we roughly ended around 13. Around 13 or 14,000 barrels, which still puts us in the top 10. But it's a dip for us. Thankfully, in the first 3 months of this year, we've gained majority of that back. So we will end higher than we did last year and hopefully higher than we did 2 years ago.
That's pretty exciting.
Yeah. Yeah, it's been cool.
Wow. That's a lot. Boy, we're going through our history fast, aren't we? I should have taken more notes before I came in here.
I have more history.
I know.
I'm a salesperson. I can talk until you.
I know. That's why I bring in more salespeople to do this because I'm a sales guy. And I remember my mom's like, how do you fill up an hour? I'm like, Mom, it's not hard to fill up an hour when you have people who like to talk.
Right.
It's not too complicated, really. So what's considered your biggest seller right now? Is it Norm's?
Yeah, Norm's is still our baby. Norm's is what we led off with and has been our flagship. As of this morning, because I look at numbers stupid consistently.
I'll bet.
I think as of this morning, it's about 56 to 57% of our sales still.
Holy cow. Wow. That's amazing.
Yeah.
But I'd say that's probably consistent with most breweries that are putting out production size beers, right?
Yeah. It's, we have these 102 barrel fermenters that we 2 to 3 times a week, Norms is put in, just because we have to.
Wow.
We're packaging Norms on Friday and Monday. I need it. It's a consistent thing. We never really found our Robin. So we needed that, you know, Norms is our Batman. Norms is our leader. Norms is our anchor. It'll always be our anchor. But we needed something else to create a foundation. So for the last 2 years, that's kind of what I've been trying to do. And thankfully, we found it. So Mr. Blue Sky,
okay,
which is the American Pale Wheat Ale with grapefruit rind and coriander, came in fourth place at GABF this year in wheats.
Okay.
Makes me kind of sad. But
it's one of my favorite beers to drink, by the way. I know I've told you that before. When I met you last time, you're like, oh, we're coming out with this in 15-pack, 12-ounce cans. Yeah. I'm like, oh, my God. So I bought some of that from Kroger's a couple weeks ago. What a great price point.
Yeah, it's kind of catapulted that to be up. Mr. Blue Sky's whole is up 135%.
Oh, yeah, easily.
Yeah, so it was 4% of our business last year. It is now 20, and that's just starting. So 15 packs just came out 3 weeks ago, 4 weeks ago, roughly. And it's almost reached the 16-ounce can level for sales yet so far.
Oh,
so,
that's amazing.
Yeah, with two less months, it's almost equal, and we're just starting with
it. Wow. Well, it'll change the way I drink it for sure. It's funny how it's only a 4-ounce difference, but right. I would buy them in 4-packs, so I would just buy a 4-pack, right? Right. It's not like I had 15 of them sitting in my house.
Right.
And when it's a 12-ounce, I'd kick back a couple. When it's a 16-ounce, I might not always do that, right? I might just have like a 16-ounce with dinner. And maybe that's all I had, you know. It kind of depends on the situation. So I could see how that would change.
Yeah, we like the 15-pack. The 15-pack is a great, great package. Thankfully, Founders kind of broke through
that mold. They
really
did, didn't they?
Yeah.
Now all kinds of people are doing that.
Right. I mean, us, Perrin, I mean, even Macros are doing it. Blue Moon has them in 15s.
Oh, yeah, I have seen that.
Yeah, I get Milwaukee's Best is coming out with 15s. Watch out, the Beast of the East.
Oh, my stomach just made a crazy noise. You said that?
I need to go to the bathroom. No,
no doubt.
But no, it's a great package, and it really introduces a cost savings across the board. Because you break it down like price per can, it's like 87 cents or something ridiculous. It's great. Whereas before, you know, 16-ounce cans are great, and we're a 16-ounce can brewery. But we really want when we want to drink a lot of something, I want some price per ounce. I want a good value. I want to crush a 12-ouncer. So we have two volume packages, and I guess the goal going forward is to find our third and fourth volume package so we can put more 15 packs. Really like that package a lot. Our brewery workers hate me for it because we have to hand pack that.
Oh, no, really? Okay.
Yeah. We're still really young.
So eventually that'll become a more automated kind of thing.
Yeah. And the way that we're situated right now in Birmingham, it doesn't really lend us for a lot of space anywhere.
Yeah.
So to add a automated packing line on our actual canning line is impossible.
Okay.
That's basically going to be a fire hazard if we do. So they hate me for it, but it pays the bills and it kind of moves some stuff.
Yeah, but
forward,
they like getting paid, meaning they like having a job.
Yeah, yeah.
That's what I always tell people. I'm like, I like getting paid at the end of the day.
I have to pay my mortgage. I have a 2-year mortgage. I can't do that.
No doubt, right? You got to buy more stuff at the Toys R Us clearance sale. We were talking about that offline before we started the show.
Hey, Power Wheels, man.
It's important. It's important to a 2-year-old.
Yeah, that Jeep Wrangler will get some use, you know? But they... Off topic. Can we just talk about I looked up all these Power Wheels, so these automated cars for kids.
Oh, I really like this beer, by the way. Sorry.
Oh, no, you're fine. And they have – it's like Audis and Mercedes-Benz and Range Rovers. It's like my kid is not driving that. Like the fact that I was getting it is because, you know, I had one as a kid and I want to project myself towards my kid.
As but, you should.
Right? So it's like the Jeep Wrangler is the most normal one of all of these. That Audi, no, I'm good. My 2-year-old doesn't need to be driving around a Mercedes-Benz around Royal Oak. That's – dear God. Just I keep on seeing dear God because dear God.
Please don't.
Yeah.
Oh, that's really funny. So we're sitting here. We just cracked open their Mexican lager. How do I say this?
El Lagaro.
Yeah, I'm not going to say that right. Yeah. El Lagaro.
There's a lot of ways to say El Ligero, El Legaro. El Lagaro, it means the light one or lightweight.
Right.
And
so it's a Mexican lager with fresh lime. It's pretty much what people would think from that. The fresh lime, though, there's a nice flavor profile of this fresh lime. It's not like a Corona that I popped a lime on the top per se, where it doesn't seem quite as, I don't know, natural, if that's the right way to say it, although it's a real lime. But adding in the lime this way, I really like that.
Yeah, we toyed around with this in the fall. Dan really likes crushable beer. So
yeah, you know, the first couple times I ever met Dan at a beer festival, I'd always see him there and I'd always be excited to talk to him. And he'd always be holding like a PBR. And I'd be like, what the F, you know, like, hey, can I have your Flying Buffalo, you know, Imperial style? He's like, yeah, here, I'm drinking PBR. I'm like, okay.
I mean, if it was up to Dan, all we would brew is a Czech Pilsner.
It's a Czech Pilsner.
And a Berliner Weiss. So the only two things that we'd ever
Which make. I really like your Berliner Weiss.
Yeah.
That's probably, actually, yours is the first one I ever had of that style.
Yeah. So we keg ferment that. So all that's sitting in kegs right now in a warm spot, just letting it go right now. So,
oh, cool.
Yeah. Just a lot of random kegs and rafters in Birmingham right now. But, no, we wanted something crushable. He was not very happy with me because I, as a sales director, I had to tell him I needed to get rid of two of his baby styles, his styles that he created way back at the beginning in 04. And those were Rail District, which is our Bohemian Pils, one of his the only thing he drinks, and Grindline, which is our Pale Ale, two very crushable beers.
But yeah, sales, great beers.
Yeah, sales just didn't dictate to keep them anymore. And so I made the call saying we're cutting them, and wasn't very happy with me. So we replaced him with a cream ale, and he is happy with that.
I like the cream ale. I've always drank that.
Yeah. It's a really good crushable beer, and we made that an ode to PBR in the first place. But he wanted to make a lager, and we had already gone down the path of the lager years ago with Platinum Blonde, and I wanted to go something different.
Which I have to say, I didn't care for that beer.
No.
I couldn't even tell you why now because it's been a long time, but I didn't like it.
Oh, no one else did either.
Okay. Well, it's not just me. And I say that with respect and the fact that I've supported a lot of your beers. I buy them on a regular basis. And for some reason, that one, if I got it in a I don't think that one was ever in your variety packs, right?
No, I don't think so. It was in a weird package to begin with, an 8-pack, 12-ounce can.
I probably hooked up with it at Clubhouse when I would do festival buses, and Jason would get me Griffin beer for the bus.
Yeah, I mean, it was fine. It is what it is. So I actually brought him – we brought him a Modelo because the hottest beer category in all is Mexican style. Cerveza.
I don't think I would have seen that coming that way.
No.
It's interesting. Now, I have to admit, I've had them at lots of breweries on draft, and I've typically enjoyed it, but I'm probably in a lighter phase of what I'm drinking now anyhow, so it does fit in that respect. So I guess it shouldn't be so crazy that that's popular.
Yeah, and so we sat in front of him and said, can you make this? And of course, Dan's like, yeah, I can make this. What are you talking about?
Yeah.
So he brought two styles to the table, one without lime, one with lime, and we all kind of sat around and said that lime is great. It just can't be over the board. It can't be. Dan doesn't like fruit unless it's supposed to mean or supposed to be in that beer. So like fruited Berliners, fruited sours. Yeah, the fruit's supposed to be
true,
in there.
True to the style.
Kyle, don't tell me to put fruit in my beer. I was like, okay, I'm sorry, buddy. I said, I'm sales director, so I have to tell you what's going to move and that's going to move. And so he appealed me and put it in, and we all loved it. So we were actually supposed to come out with a different summer seasonal, and we all sat around and said, no, we're cutting it. We're doing this instead. But the summer seasonal was supposed to be Perry White.
Perry White, what a fun name.
So it was a wit beer, owed to his Michigan Brewing Company days, the Cellus White that he used to make.
Yeah, that's true. Okay.
And
Cellus.
He would put Perry in it, so Pear.
Wow.
We made it last year. It went over
really
well.
Interesting. I've never seen anybody do it that way before. I like Perry as a style.
Yeah.
Or as a whatever.
Cider.
Cider.
Perry cider. It's basically a hybrid.
Yeah. I've never seen anyone hybrid that.
Yeah. We're still going to make it. But we all agree that that has more traction and more wheels than the Perry.
Well,
Perry
and you have wheels on it because there's this cool lowrider kind of Schwinn style.
Yeah, it's actually a Stingray.
Yeah. People collect those like crazy.
Yeah.
I've been to a couple of these collectible shows before, and I've been told by my wife I am not allowed to get into that part of biking.
Got it.
Being an avid bike rider, and I have a few bikes, but they're, you know, I ride them. The people who are into bikes at that tier restore them just like they restore cars. There's people that restore bikes. Stingrays is obviously a real popular if you were selling one of those, you could get a lot of money for one in really good condition. Yeah, I was amazed. Most of these people, you'd look at them and be like, "Do you ever have you ever ridden a bike?" Right? Like, you know, not to be mean, but just you see that. Yeah, they're not into the bike scene.
Right.
They're into the custom. I want to work in my garage and do this thing, and that's what they do. Right. And it's interesting. It's just a whole different subset of people with bikes that I didn't know anything about.
Now, we put that logo online, and immediately, like, the first seven responses were about the bike, not about the beer. So
I'm sure people are like, oh, I want a shirt like that.
Yeah, yeah. And I said, calm down. Chill out. Let me make the beer first. So
maybe we could get one of those bikes and raffle it off next year if you guys decide you want to be part of the charity events again.
Well, I really like this beer. So that I talked about earlier, finding that next 15-pack.
Could be this bad boy, huh?
Yeah, I don't know if I'm going to go year-round with it, but a seasonal 15-pack isn't out of the ordinary, so who knows?
Yeah, I mean, Founders plays the seasonal game with their 15s, don't they? I think I just saw PC Pills back out in the market.
Yeah, that's a seasonal. They're in six-packs this year.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I saw Founders wrap dropping off. That's the only reason.
Okay. I'm like, why do you know that? Wow. Yeah. I'm in Myers all the time, and Myers and Founders are definitely having fun with each other, so they're on display all the time. We'll just say it like that.
There you go.
And so I constantly am seeing it, including the cases of Solid Gold.
So, hey, good segue.
What do you got to say about
it? Good segue, because this is the year of the lager.
It is, isn't it?
Yeah.
So this is a great beer to have as a complement into that world, because people are looking at lagers again. Now you got a flavorful lager here with the lime in it, fresh lime. I mean, damn.
So we actually had an event at Detroit Fleet in Ferndale. Man, I'm choking right now. Excuse me. A couple weeks ago, it was a lager off, and it was a
lager off.
Yeah,
that's funny.
Royal lager instead of royal ale. It was us. It was Detroit Brew Company. Man, yeah, I need more beer.
My God.
Okay. Detroit Brew Company and like Epic Los Locos and Solid Gold, and it was just cool to see the variations of the styles that you can do, because lager is a pretty very, very basic beer. So you don't really have any variations on it unless you do a Mexican style, so corn-based or or dry hop it, or, you know, you could do a lot of stuff with it, but for the most part, it's a very basic, very easygoing style. But I think that's what we're going to as a society with beer. I think people are
I totally agree with that. I think
people are barrel-aged out. People are double IPA'd out.
I am, for sure. I mean, I have been for a couple of years. I've slowly, I guess, adjusted what I have at home to being more – I don't want to say sessionable, because that makes it sound like everything's weak. But just lighter fare when it comes to my regular drinking. But, you know, for St. Patrick's Day, I had a great dry Irish stout. I had like the Arbor Dry Irish Stout they make that they can now.
Is it Pharisee?
Yeah. And that's a great beer. And that's, you know, low fours percent ABV. So it still falls in that sessionable kind of category. You could do that with a lot of porters too, at least for the winter part, right? Now we're transitioning when it's not snowing in April to, you know, lighter, fruitier-ish beers, citrus-use beers when we get into spring, summer. So it makes sense.
I think breweries are starting to realize, too, that, I mean, quantity might be a very valuable thing.
Sure.
As opposed to getting your dollar ring with a big bottle of barrel-aged something. Well, sell 20 of those instead.
Yeah.
Get some money for it. But no, all of us in the beer industry are kind of watching this Solid Gold.
I'm sure. It's got to be a big conversation piece across the U.S. with anyone that's distributing.
Well, yeah, because they're taking their 24 packs and they're actually placing them. Man, my throat is killing me. Placing them like domestic.
That's all right. Only like six people are listening to this right now, so we're fine.
Well, there's a throat, a frog in there.
You want some water?
No, I'm fine right now. I'll just keep on drinking beer. But no, they're placing them strategically, like with domestics. So they're going after a demographic that no one's been able to touch.
Yeah, for sure.
So we're all watching.
So you know how much it was at – do you know how much the – well, you probably do already know this. The retail for the 24-pack of cans, 12-ounce cans at Meijer.
Was it like $17.18?
It was $17.99.
Yeah.
I actually bought a whole case. I'd already bought a 15-pack of it to try it. The 15-pack was $12.99. I thought, holy cow, this is great.
To be honest, if anyone can do it, they can. We're all watching because we wouldn't be able to do it. I mean, that would be a price point that we wouldn't be able to touch. But if you do the quantity, you can do it and you could kill it. So they're the ones.
Because they were real quick. I mean, they released the 15, and I think they said that's in a six too, isn't it?
Yep, six-pack 15.
Yeah. And then real quickly, like it wasn't on the same press release, but I swear it was weeks later, they said, hey, we're going to do a 24-pack.
Yeah, I saw that.
So they must have said right out of the gate, wow, this sold awesome, quick, instantly.
I hope so. I wouldn't mind going to a sessionable like style. We have a lot of session products, so.
Yeah, totally. You guys are in a spot where you could totally do that.
Yeah.
And you're already canning. So canning seems like it'd be, I think if you had a 24-pack of bottles, that would be more expensive, right?
Yeah. I mean, cans give us a better offering. We tried bottles for a couple months and that just did not work at all.
Well, I don't even remember that.
It's probably a good thing.
Maybe Norm's. Norm's was bottled, right?
Yeah, six pack.
Okay. Then I think I do remember seeing that in the real early days.
It was us doing a trial period and, you win some, you lose some, and that just didn't work. And, you throw stuff against the wall to see what sticks, and that did not stick. So
I read an article that just came out that has Mr. Sam of Dogfish Head's commentary. Yeah. Did you see that article that's out there?
Yeah, about pricing.
Yeah, so he's the opposite side of the spectrum.
Correct.
Of saying that it's a bad thing that they didn't say founders, but he's totally referring to them.
Can,
I mean,
you can
see that in the article. Basically, this dollar a beer or less in that respect concept is going to, kill us. We're all going to die and, we should all be super premium all the time. And then part of that article is talking about this variety 12-pack that
– for like $22.
Yeah. And I was like, whoa, okay. And don't get me wrong. I've enjoyed Dogfish Head's beers. I will say, though, I don't buy it on a much regular basis because we live in the land of plenty in Michigan where I have so many other options and options that I could get less.
Right.
So – in my mind, I'm like, well, why would I pay all this if I could get this and be just as happy?
Correct.
I think a lot of I can't be the only one that looks at that and says, oh, wow, okay. Like occasionally I would have one of those. But yeah, so I'm not going to buy a $22 12-pack, especially it's not like it was 120-minute IPA for $22. Right. It was like 6-minute IPA that – I can't even name the beers that were in it. They're
I looked at it a little bit. But
that Goza – is there that weird Goza hybrid one, sea salt weird thing?
Oh, sequential.
Oh, there we go. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's what I'm trying to say.
Well, I have a lot of respect for Dogfish.
I do. Mean, I always have enjoyed hearing him talk and his commentary. And
incredibly smart. Incredibly – he had that whole like historic ale period that he was doing. And I worked for a distributor that sold it for a while and – their beer is amazing, but come on.
So he comes out with this viewpoint, and that's, free country, right?
Oh, yeah.
You can have that viewpoint, and great. But don't blast founders for them taking the market differently.
Right.
Because we're in a diverse market now where you can make all kinds of divisions, right?
Man.
Yeah. It's like, we have the same infighting. I running a beer tour business, I get to hear all kinds of commentary from every brewery. Jesus, Kyle, we should have brought more beer.
I should have. My bad. This throat thing. I don't know what's going on.
That's all right. what was my point? Yeah, I mean, I hear commentary a lot with customers. So, and I'm Switzerland. Like, I'm in the middle. Like, I just love everybody. Like, I'm glad we have all these options and it's all good, right? I'm not here to bash anyone.
Yeah.
I'm definitely not bashing Dogfish Head or Sam. Whose last name I can't say.
Caligione.
Yeah, I can't say that right. So I don't try to say it. I just say like Mr. Dogfish Head. And, whatever, right? They can be where they are in the market and everyone can be somewhere else.
That's also like the really cool aspect about this industry, especially the Michigan beer industry, is that we all love each other. Obviously, we're competitors. Obviously, that we are fighting for shelf space and pieces of that pie. But – not only do I refuse to talk badly about other breweries, I don't want to because I think the succession or like the success of any brewery in the state means success for me.
And, oh, that's so true.
You know, especially on the east side of the state, the Bible Belt, quote unquote, of Michigan brewing is mostly on the west side. That's where it started.
It's very true, yeah.
And they have amazing breweries over there, but we don't get a lot of respect on this east side.
Oh, no, I agree.
I think there's some amazing breweries over here, and so any success of an east side brewery, I'm all for. I'm not rooting against the West Side. Don't take it that way.
Yeah. I went to Western Michigan. You went to Central Michigan. Mm-hmm. So, you know, we've been on the other side of the state. I mean, right. I got into craft beer at Bell's, but I run a tour company in Detroit. Yeah. You work at a brewery in Birmingham. I mean, like, we want stuff to happen on the East Side too. And I agree. I mean, it's when Grand Rapids got known as Beer City USA, then everybody wants to talk about the West Side.
Yeah.
And, you know, we started stuff here too. So we're just as old over here.
Oh, I
just as much history.
There's some amazing breweries. I mean, not only do we have like Kunin and Dragon Mead and all these amazing, I don't want to say old school, but places that have been around for a while. But
now we got new kids that like have come out in the last couple of years.
Batch. I can't speak enough towards Batch. And specifically, I'm a fangirl. For one specific brewery out of Ann Arbor.
You're a fangirl.
Yeah,
huh?
Yeah. Okay, I'll do that. Yeah.
I don't use that term, but okay, you can.
Holmes Brewery is such a fantastic freaking brewery. I know it's Ann Arbor, but
yeah, I've been into Holmes. I had a good experience. People keep definitely talking their so praises. Good. They've been doing their, you know, in-brewery kind of can releases, and it seems like they're just killing it.
Amazing
that.
IPAs, amazing kettle sours. It's just... really good dudes, good food, good atmosphere, and their swag.
Yeah, it's pretty dope,
impressive,
isn't it?
Impressive, yeah.
Yeah, I have to say that. Yeah, I ran into someone at like Axel Bruin that was bartending over at Holmes. He's like, dude, you got to come in here. And he had this super dope hat. I'm like, yeah, I want to come in and get one of those hats.
Right.
Like, that's pretty cool. And, you know, they've done that with the graphics on the cans to kind of match what their swag looks like.
Geometrical.
Yeah.
Trippy.
Yeah.
It's
obviously
great.
Someone has a hard on for that, but it looks cool.
It looks
like,
great.
Hey man, plus they got the whole, it's Asian food, right?
Yeah. Very Asian, like kimchi and pho.
Stuff I don't know anything about. But when I was in there, they were like real busy at lunchtime. I was swinging by there. I was out mountain biking somewhere else and I swang by for a beer last summer. And I was just like, holy cow, look at all the people in here.
Oh, no.
On like a Tuesday afternoon.
Well, that's the cool thing too, is that so you can still be like Holmes doesn't have a big scale production facility by any means.
Yeah, definitely not.
They're extremely popular. You can be uber local in this industry. Like, so I live in Royal Oak and I can walk to five different breweries from my front door. And like River Rouge, extremely small.
Yeah.
But I love that place. I love Eddie. I love the
people.
Yeah,
it's been on my show.
Yeah.
Yeah. When I finally woke him up to get here, he, I think, lives closer to here than you would. Where'd you say?
I legitimately could walk here.
So. He's pretty close. He's just down 11 mile. And I had to call him. And I'm like, you're not who I thought was going to be late, right? Like, what's up?
Right.
And he was just like, oh, yeah. You know, now we're good friends. I'm a lifetime Mug Club member there. And that's a regular place I drink at. It's part of my walking tour route when I do walking brewery tours in Royal Oak. So the second he opened, I was all over that because I knew. I'm like, oh, he's got a cool small system. It's going to be a fun vibe.
Yeah.
He really enjoys the scene. You know, him and I had a real good.
He's really like, I don't want to say classic. Well, classically trained. I mean, he's trained really well over like Alesmith area. And
yeah. He was San Diego guy. Yeah, film industry. But this show's not about him, right? This is about so Kyle and Griffin Claw.
This is usually what I do, though. As a sales director, I should talk about myself more often, but I'm such a fan of the industry as a whole.
No. That's what's fun about this. That's why when we all get together like this, or we're at festivals, we're all comparing stuff, talking about stuff.
I love it. It's a sounding board of fun, you know? I mean, because all of us hang out. We see each other more than we see our own families. Because we're with each other every weekend. We're with each other two times a week. You know, it's – I can't praise this industry enough. And it's already cool to begin with because it's beer. But the fact that it's a competitive, non-competitive, competitive, non-competitive market.
That's a lot of words there.
No, okay. it's true though. It's like, yeah, we're competitive. We're fighting for shelf space. But I still love that guy. But I need – you know, I got to pay my mortgage. But I still love that guy. I'll make sure he's taken care of.
Sure.
You know? So we all hang out and we all talk to each other and all of us text each other every day and
I mean, I originally met you through Clubhouse, mm-hmm. and you'd be coming in, and let's see, in the early days before Clubhouse opened, and weren't we doing like some of these tastings?
Every Wednesday.
Every Wednesday. I got to go to a whole bunch of those. I felt so cool getting invited to come to those. And then I really met you and kind of all the reps in that, all the people that were tied to distributors in the area that I didn't really, all that said, I didn't really know that many at that point because I didn't have visualization. Yeah. Ooh. This is why I do podcasts there and I'm not on like real television stations.
I don't have a face for TV, so that's fine.
Speaking of that, I'm going to be on an upcoming small segment of like Live in the D.
Oh.
Yeah, which I never get asked to stuff like that on TV. It's always radio or print, which is, I'm happy with anything, trust me. But I think it's like I'll have like a roving reporter and she's going to do a semi bike tour with me. Hopefully it won't be snowing and we're literally doing this like on the 16th of April, which is kind of early.
So random. Last time I did Live in the D, I did a split segment with a guy that does pierogies.
Oh my God. Wow.
Yeah, it was great, except I got 10 seconds of the 3-minute clip because they all cared more about the pierogies than they did beer. So
hopefully it's all about me. Right. Yeah. I totally get what you're saying. Yeah. Right?
I didn't care. I understood it because I wanted that pierogi.
You just roll with it because you're there.
Yeah, yeah. So it's just me in the background looking really bored with a bunch of beer, and then they're talking about pierogies in front of me. It's sweet. Here's a bunch of 4-packs, and then I'm gonna eat all those pierogies later, but I'm still here. What's up, guys?
Right.
Gryffindor, yay. You know, it's But hopefully your experience is a little bit better than
I don't
mine.
Know. Well, I don't know. I think originally when they I can't think of the girl's name. Kyla, I think is her name. I might not be saying her name right. It's not the main two folks. It's not like Jason Carr and the other gal.
I'm not sure.
Yeah, whatever.
I literally like walked in and set up and walked
out. So. I think this is their one that like goes somewhere remote and tapes a segment with like GoPros or something.
Right.
So I'm kind of thinking that's what it is. I probably won't know till I know, if that makes any sense.
Yeah, yeah.
Right? Like I know I got to have a bike there for and we're going to meet at Traffic Jam and Snug and we're going to do something. And I have done that stuff before, I guess. I was on a PBS show called Discover the D. And they replay it like all the time. Whenever it gets replayed, somebody's like, I just saw you on PBS. I'll be like, yeah, I did that like 6 years ago. It's awesome.
Good.
You know, but.
Because anytime anyone replays anything that I was on TV, no one calls me.
You don't think so? That doesn't happen.
No one knows.
Well, that's why I put the video on my website for the business. So I almost force you to probably see it at some point.
Because we had like an episode of like Pure Brews America and some other things from like CBS. And yep, no one sees it.
I got on this is like random. So one of my tour guides was in a brewery. I can't even remember what. And the Pure Brew show was on and they were showing like something from 2 seasons ago. And there's like a 60 seconds of me on one of those episodes.
Really?
Yeah. Like I don't even know what I said. I was at the Stroh's Bohemian Pilsner launch at Brew Detroit. And Shannon Long was there doing some B-reel stuff, I think. And she's like, hey, come up here and say something. I don't even know what I said. It was sort of like a first Stroh's story or I don't even know. And, you know, she's awesome like she is. And I don't remember what I said. All I said was, can I show my book in like the segment?
My wife's laughing at me.
She's like, you're really going to sit there and hold the cover? I'm like, hell yeah. When am I going to get a chance to get this again? Like no one's asking me to be on camera. You know, and they don't even show that part on it, by the way. They just show me talking. Anyway, so my tour guide a couple of weeks ago was like in a bar or brewery with another friend drinking and then bam, like I popped up on the screen. She's like, holy shit, you know, it's like, oh my
found
God,
you.
Cool, you know? So then she had to text me right away and be like, I just saw you on TV. I'm like, what are you talking about?
It wasn't,
you
know,
I'm just sitting at home on the couch. Yeah. Like I didn't do anything. Yeah.
There's cameras in your house.
Now that Pure Brew show is like, they're doing a 4th season, but Shannon's not part of it and it's two other people. I'm not sure I get what they're doing. So
they did like a spirits version of it as well.
Yeah. I saw a couple of those.
But Shannon's other business, Brew Exports, like legitimately taking off.
Yeah. It's just rocking. We're friends on Facebook, and I just follow Brew Export anyhow and constantly see posts. She's all over the place.
Because we signed with them this year. So we're in their portfolio now. And
well, that's exciting. So like what does that mean then?
It's crazy. So we're only in the state of Michigan. We don't go to Ohio. We don't go to Indiana. We don't go to Illinois, Wisconsin, whatever. We're in the state of Michigan. The farthest we go is the UP. And she approached us because we were always the whole Green Flash thing. we want to go where we can support it, which they didn't. So we learn from your mistakes type situations.
Sure.
We didn't want to do that. But thankfully with exporting, we don't have to do that. We can send beer if so we create a pamphlet, if you will, of all of our products that we feel comfortable sending overseas. Obviously something that has really short dates, very IPA centric, very hop centric. I'm not going to send, if it falls off in 3 months, I don't really want it in England.
Sure.
You know what I mean? So, we put in a portfolio together, and so now she goes out and sends it to distributors across the seas, and we kind of wait and see. And she's been really, really successful at it so far, and we're really excited to sign.
So an exporter is like a middleman between producer yeah. and distributor, but distributor in that market, and then she creates the relationships in the middle,
because,
like a broker, yeah. I guess you could say.
There's a lot of like logistics that I just don't want to deal
with. And there's legalities of crossing borders,
tariffs,
right?
And all that, like just a lot of laws and taxes and just transportation in general that personally I just don't want to deal with, because I have a lot of other problems that I have.
Sure,
deal with.
Totally.
But she'll do that for us. And she's been amazing at it. That's basically how she got in this industry, you know, graduating from college with a thesis on that.
How crazy is that, right? I remember when I first met her, at a guild conference, but like, Jesus, now maybe that was 4 years ago, maybe five right. years ago. And she was like a young pup out of school, full of energy kind of thing. And she had this brew export business. And then I think that show had just started, and just full of energy. It made me feel old.
Took you know, the scene by storm.
Yeah, I'm like, wow, where'd this person come from? Yeah. And, you know, at first I don't know what to think sometimes when I see something like that, you know, but she's the real deal. I'm not knocking
it
out. It's not like that at all. I really like her. I think she's got a great personality, and she's fit well for the show and clearly for that business. It's a big relationship business that would work, you know. And if you're young and willing to hustle and work hard,
that's all that matters.
There you go. So think about different opportunities. When I got out of college, I couldn't have even considered something like this.
Dear Lord, no. I was working on a golf course, okay?
Yeah, I hear you.
I was carrying bags around, and here she is doing theses and starting
right?
an export
company. I know.
Like, all the power to her. She's amazing.
Totally.
She's incredibly smart and intelligent. So she's like – I mad respect for that woman. So
who else have you got interviews from before that were – any that you could think of that were really fun, really different?
I mean, the Better on Draft people are fantastic.
Better on Draft, who also funds the Beer Tour Guy show. Thanks, guys.
Hey, love you. No, they're phenomenal. We've done a couple bits for like Meyer and Kroger and ABC. ABC 7.
Yeah, that sure. sounds right.
I get confused.
Yeah,
I
mean, Channel 7. There
this Mid Michigan guy went back to Mid Michigan for 2 days this weekend, and now I want to see ABC 12, which is which is Flint, and that's
not here,
work.
Man. It's all about the D.
Yeah, I know. So they were really good. I've done a couple other things, but ABC is by far been the pretty impressive to me. But I had a really good time at Better on Draft. I tried a shotgun a Mr. Blue Sky, and instead shot myself in the eye with a beer, and like fell over, and Angela taped me doing that. So that
wow, fun. That sounds exciting. I want to get that posted up on
yeah,
my site.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure she did like a Facebook live feed of me falling over in the
oh
parking
my
lot
God.
Outside. So that was
it. Makes
was
my good. Show seem pretty boring then, doesn't it? We just casually drank a couple Mexican lagers here. Well,
I'm pretty sure we also drank like a Bud Light Lime Rita grape
oh,
version.
No, okay.
So no, that was yeah. it was quite the night. And again,
well, they have a way bigger budget than I do. So
I mean, that Bud Light Lime Rita grape. Ooh. Matt took all the took out all the resources to get that one. So
I remember I was multiple years ago, you know, Todd Parker.
Yeah. You always wear shorts.
Yeah, that's like a whole other conversation about Todd. But he knew these guys called the Brew Bubbas. Do you ever remember
no.
those guys? Yeah, that's a little more older school. And they used to do a podcast before podcasting was really trendy.
Yeah.
And they did it in their basement. And they had a whole studio set up in their basement, right? So one day I got invited on like a Monday night to go tape with them and Todd. So Todd had – what were they doing? They were like doing fresh hops, and then they had malt liquors, and they were like combining the two or something. And I think they taped for like 2 hours straight, okay? So we're down there, and all these guys are like big dudes, right? Here's mm-hmm. me. I'm not a big dude. I'm just normal sized. And – we're drinking the whole time. And I'm just like, no one gets up to go to the bathroom. It's like 2 hours in. Like 2 hours into drinking. I mean, I'm only human, right? Somewhere at the tail end of that, I'm just like, where's the bathroom?
Right.
You know, like I couldn't make it any farther. And they're just looking at me like I'm like some little girl. You know, I'm like, it's 2 hours. Like we drank 20. Right. You know, like I had a huge buzz on.
My bladder is normal.
Yeah. Like I'm just a normal person, right?
Right.
So
my bladder is not a pool.
Yeah. But to be a tour guide, like when I'm running tours, there's days where just people are talking to you the whole time, right? Like think about it, when you're at a festival and just your booth is just constant people
right.
and you don't get to walk away forever. Like you have to be able to hold it.
Right.
Right. Like it's tricky doing that. It's something that I didn't think about in my tour guide training when I started my business, I guess, was that I had to be really good at holding it. You know what I'm saying?
Well, yeah, it's. I mean, you got to scope out the bathrooms at festivals.
Oh,
but they all totally. Turn really gross. So,
oh my God! I mean, well, you know how it works at like guild festivals. Like 1 minute there's no lines, and there's there's like 100 porta johns typically at a guild festival. But 1 minute there's no line, next minute it's like 20 people deep, and of course that's when you really got to go, and you're just like, oh,
yep,
it totally went wrong. What am I, a rookie? Like I haven't been to like 100 beer festivals.
That's why I just sweat a lot. So I sweat.
Is that what yeah. you do? You sweat it out. That's
yep.
your trick.
Yep. Just I'm just fat and sweaty.
Oh,
so
okay.
It all happens. So it just works itself out. In Grand Rapids, we were right next to the porta potties. So we ended up putting stickers of Dan Rogers all over the porta potties.
Oh, aren't you guys nice?
Yeah, you know, Dan wasn't able to make it, so we made sure that his presence was felt. So there were stickers of Dan Rogers inside of porta potties.
Oh, well, at least he has a good humor about it, I'm sure, right?
Oh, he does. There's actually stickers of Dan Rogers' head all over our brewery facility right now.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, that's super funny.
Dan's amazing. Dan's pushing the age a little bit, but he's...
Yeah, because what's Dan? Is Dan like... he's in his 50s, right?
Late, yeah.
Late 50s.
So I just found out... I had to book him an airplane ticket yesterday, so let's see. Yeah? Yeah, he's 58.
Wow. Oh, okay. I guess I never really thought about that.
He'll be 58. Sorry, he's 57.
Okay.
So yeah, he's 58, and so he's getting up there, and he's getting fed up with these little kids.
Oh, I'll bet.
I mean, little kids are 20. We're 20 and 30 years old in the brewery, but yeah, we have fun with him. He doesn't like our music. So we blare music in the brewery. He doesn't like it. He wears headphones every day. I love that man to death. Nothing but respect for that guy. But it's funny to watch his reactions whenever we actually talk about anything. So he's quite the character.
That's funny. So we have a great event that we're working together on that's coming up.
Yeah.
May 5th.
Cinco de Mayo.
That's funny. I was just looking at that date the other day. I go, wow, that's Cinco de Mayo. I just like hadn't even processed
it's
that.
Also
my
wife's birthday.
Oh, look
she's,
at you.
She's Irish. Was born on Cinco de Mayo. So,
well, God, I'd even give her a free ticket for that.
And married to a beer industry guy.
So. Yeah, so she pretty much gets a free ticket anyhow.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah.
Like people always will say that to my wife. I'm like, my wife's already getting everything.
Yeah.
Like she's not worried about that stuff.
No.
So we're working together on it's called Cruising for the Trails. It's a charity bike event that I originally started with Clubhouse BFD I always say 5 years ago, and I guess it's 5 years ago. I don't even remember now.
That's crazy.
And we originally had New Belgium tied into it, and now you guys have come on to be our beer sponsor, beer and bike sponsor, we'll say.
Yeah.
Right? I'm pretty excited about that. So this ride, for those of you that are listening, the six of you that are listening, on May 5th, we start at Clubhouse BFD. We pop on the sidewalk. We get to the Clinton River Trail. We take it into downtown Rochester. We jump on the Pink Creek Trail. We get you out to the halfway point on the Pink Creek Trail, which is the Pink Creek Cider Mill. There, you're going to crack open a beautiful can of Griffin Claw beer and enjoy gorgeous. Two full-size donuts. So I think our goal is to have Mr. Blue Sky and have Norm's Gateway. Yeah. Your 2 12-ounce beers.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. You're looking at me like, I haven't really told you this, but yeah, that's what we're going to do.
Sure. Yes.
Yeah.
Exactly.
That sounds like a great idea, right?
Got it.
Fairly sessionable, so we're not getting you hammered on the bike trail.
4.5%.
Yeah. Perfect. Both of those will really complement it well. They go perfectly with donuts. I've already researched this.
Done.
So we get fresh donuts to you out there. Then you bike back. We're going to get back to Clubhouse BFD. We're going to have a dude playing acoustic.
Yep.
I know that you, Jason, kind of set that up. That'll be outside in the patio area at Clubhouse BFD in Rochester Hills at Crooks and M59. And then we're going to raffle off this awesome Electra company, Griffin Claw branded bike, right? So a cool looking cruiser bike from Electra. If you know anything about cruiser bikes, Electra is kind of the brand. That's the cool kids brand.
Yes.
That's been making them for a lot of years. You guys had some of these done up a little while ago,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah, we did. We didn't really know what we were going to do with them. We just wanted to do it. We have a pretty good bike scene.
With the Birmingham location,
yeah,
a lot
the
of
Birmingham
bikers
location.
Coming in there.
Yeah, we make bike jerseys. We do a lot of cool stuff with that. And so we need to do that. We knew we were going to do that. That's the reason there's a bike on our El Agaro camp. So we have a good scene with that. So we made them up. We just didn't know what we were going to do with them. So they're currently sitting in my office.
Right. And, so when I came and saw you on another snowy day, so it's kind of snowy today.
Right?
So I saw you. I don't remember. That was in February, I think. And it was like snowing like a mother.
Yeah.
And I was like, what am I doing meeting you here today? Right. There's snow everywhere. It's jacked.
Right.
But we met and all those bikes were up there and we kind of talked about partnering together on this. So when folks get back to Clubhouse DFD, maybe we'll have one of these beers too for them to drink. So the idea is you get a beer at the halfway, a couple donuts, and then you get a beer at the back end. And then we raffle off a bike and we kick back a portion of the ticket sales and all of the bike raffle ticket sales to the Friends of the Pink Creek Trail to help with trail enhancement. So it's a really great cause. We're really excited. I'm really excited. I am really excited to have you guys on board as the beer. It kind of makes sense, doesn't it? Because what's right next door to Clubhouse BFD?
The new 33,000 square foot production
facility. Yeah, so let's talk a little bit about that before we go off the air here. So I started building that kind of a couple years ago, right?
It's been a long story, sort of in the making. Again, the whole theory of us like growing out of our space really quickly.
Yeah.
So we knew we needed to expand. So thankfully we had some parcelage right next to Clubhouse, and so we took it and tore down Eastside Mario's, which used to be there, the old Canadian Italian restaurant.
Well, I never called it that. That's funny. Canadian Italian.
It's a Canadian franchise, Italian restaurant, which is really good food. I ate there quite a bit back in the day when I was calling it in Clubhouse. So we tore down all the walls. We kept the infrastructure for Eastside, but then blew it out and made a huge production facility. We needed it. We have legitimately no space, and I've said it multiple times so far. There's a new 20-barrel system that's going in there. Our distillery that we've had in Birmingham since day one goes in there. A whole new canning line, a kegging line, all that stuff. There's a bunch of barrels in there right now. Storage. We just don't have space. So for in order us to expand.
Storage, like storage, glorious storage.
Dude, we have nothing. Thankfully, our really good distributor partners, Powers, were our storage for the first 3.5 years.
Okay.
But logistically, that doesn't make sense going forward. So we needed it. And so we went from a 20,000 barrel capacity at Birmingham to now combined we'll have a 70,000 barrel capacity.
Amazing. What a difference.
Yeah. We won't use that. That's again, growing
sure
too much too quickly. Methodical is the way to go. But at least we have the space to grow into. So that'll be hopefully, knock on wood, opening sometime soon. Brew house is in there. Still's in there. Fermenters are slowly going in there. It's just it's a slow process. Again, we want to do it right. We want to make sure all the wires are whether we're supposed to, the piping's right, the drainage is right, everything's right, combustible rooms, all that stuff. So it's a process. It's going along perfectly fine in my mind. As long as it opens up sometime this year, I'm pretty happy.
Then you won't have to answer all those questions all the time.
Dear Lord. yeah. And a lot of people got a little mad about us not having a restaurant or anything associated to it quite yet. Let me get the real thing first.
Sure.
Let me get the stuff that pays the bills and what actually moves us going forward, which is our production. Let me get that right first. Then we'll focus on restaurant and food and bar. After that, but I need my beer, dude.
Yeah.
I need to produce. And
well, what a better place to drink Griffin Claw beer at than one, obviously in Birmingham, but two, next door to your production
Clubhouse,
facility.
Yeah.
We got Clubhouse BFD, the best beer bar in all of Michigan. That's my opinion for sure. Many people's opinion. And they always have a lot of great Griffin Claw beers on.
Sure do.
Obviously, there's some common ownership there with the son of the founders of Griffin.
So we're owned by two women, Bonnie LePage and Mary Nicholson, and they're amazing. And Bonnie's son owns Clubhouse. So that's kind of like the partnership that is right there.
I wonder how many times he sent you a message while we were taping the show.
Oh, what do you think? My phone's upside down. I don't want to see it right now. I'm forcing about a pallet of beer in a Clubhouse next week anyway. So
okay, I understand.
I'm sure he'll call about that.
How fun. Well, I want to thank you for coming on the show today. If people want to get more information about Griffin Claw, how do they do that?
Our Facebook, facebook.com/GriffinClaw. And then we have an Instagram for Griffin Claw Brewing Company. And our website, griffinclaw.com, actually is being revamped right now. And it'll be redone in the next 2 to 3 weeks. So,
how exciting. I just can't wait for a new website.
The website we have is like 5 years old.
But. It's all right, though. It's all right.
I'm excited. I've been working on it for
a year. It's better
than
most, but I remember you telling me about that. Well, I want to thank you, Kyle, for coming on the show today.
Thank you.
I can't wait to drink more of this Mexican lager. If you want to get more information about the Cruising for the Trails charity bike event on May 5th that Clubhouse is sponsoring with myself, Motor City Brew Tours, and Clubhouse BFD and Main Street Bikes and Pan Creek Cider Mill and Friends of Pan Creek Trail, you can go to MotorCityBrewTours.com. To get more information about that. It's a great event. $25 a person gets you 2 beers, 2 donuts. You help out a good cause, and you get to drink some great beer. So I want to thank everybody for listening to episode 11 of the Beer Tour Guy Show. Stay tuned to next month when I have someone awesome from the beer industry who I've yet to confirm, but could be the Falling Down owner. We'll see if Mark gets back to me. If not, it'll be someone else that's awesome. So stay tuned. Thanks for listening to the Beer Tour Guy Show.